What do you see as the picture of December 18th, 1991?
Well, if the regions have done no more for the shareholders than we've done to date, I think the regions are in trouble of being sold out to outside interests. And I can see why. If by that time the regions are not profitable and are not benefiting shareholders, I think there would be a very strong desire to sell your stock and get something out of land claims anyway. I don't think that would be beneficial in the long run. And it's something that all regions are concerned with. And that's why most of them, well, we're all scrambling to try to become profitable and get some benefits back to the shareholders. There are some things in the Act that would prevent a takeover. One of them being that it would allow the regional corporation to put in their bylaws that stock that goes to out of native hands to non-natives would be non-voting. And so that's at least one ploy. There are other plans, but they all involve a lot of money, and I'm not sure the regions can play that keep-up game or buying stock. You're still buying it from a shareholder, and when you do, that shareholder is without ownership. And I'm not sure that's a good way for the shareholder or for the corporation.
That was Emil Nadi, President Emeritus of the Alaska Federation of Natives and current President of Dayon Limited. Plans are being made on a village level as well to prevent the transfer of stock to non-natives, according to Richard Frank, a member of the Board of Directors of Seth Yaa Corporation of Minto Village.
The corporation should have access to the private stock first. Then after that, it should be up to the stockholders.
One of the amendments to S-9 deals with stock alienation. A provision of that amendment states that if stock is transferred to a non-native, they will not have voting rights in the corporation, a position ascribed to by Seth Yaa and Doyon.
What do you see the relationship of village and regional corporations in 1991?
They should be pretty much the same as they are. I expect by then, at least hope by then, that the regional corporations are up and going and strong and into businesses that are returning something to the village.
Land can be transferred, can be sold once it's been conveyed. That's starting to happen slowly.
That's true. There are no restrictions on land. And the minute they get title to land, they can lease it, sell it, deed it away, or do whatever they want with it. That's as contrasted to stock, which you can't borrow against, give away, or sell. You can with land. And but I think that there's very strong feeling for and ties to the land that will prevent village corporations from selling land. At least that's what I'm seeing. I hope that feeling continues, because in the long run, the future of the people is tied to the land, ownership of the land.
Richard Frank sees a very strong tie to the land for his people, and they have plans to develop its resources in the future.
We're just like the timber industry. We feel that we shouldn't get involved in it now, because probably 50 years from now there'll be more demand for timber, and these are things that we see that the subsurface resources will be more benefit to the corporation than at present. Also, we're looking in the direction of agriculture programs for the local residents. We maintain that we can have our ham and eggs locally than getting it from the lower 48. And wild barley, we're looking at the Minto Flats as putting it out there for getting the forbearing animals back.
One critical aspect of future development is personnel and investment in young people. First Richard Frank, then Emil Nadi.
We're telling the younger people that we need more administrative people to get involved in the future. Also, when you're talking about corporation lands and money and all that, we have to have lawyers.
I put a great deal of faith in the young people, and especially the women. I think the women are going to play a very key role in what happens in the villages in the next 10 years.
Those next 10 years will also see changes in the villages.
I think, you know, that they can combine the best of both worlds. I don't think it's necessary to make a complete transition to the Western lifestyle. But some adjustments have to be made just to survive and keep the corporations going. That doesn't mean that you can't continue to live some of the good life. You know, being on the river in the summer and being out in the camp in the wintertime, in the springtime, was a very desirable ways of life. And I think it's possible to meld them and get the best of both. But to do that, you've got to know exactly how to function in the business world. That means you have to have the education. And you have to be able to compete, and you have to be able to talk the language and know exactly what you're doing. And it's possible.
Nadi's perspective, from his position as president of the Interior's Regional Profit-Making Corporation, differs from Frank's not-so-positive outlook.
Since the Native Land Claims Act became reality, I think the lifestyle has changed, and drastically. There was more communications among the Native people, and there was more unity. And the influx of people from other areas other than the local has become more involved. It seemed like everybody wanted an interest in the corporation Minto other than besides the local people. So there has been a change in the lifestyle at Minto.
It's now 8 years since the passage of the Land Claim Settlement Act. Of the 10 to 12 million acres Joyon is entitled to receive, less than 1% has been conveyed to date. All of the village corporations are still surviving, but the condition that they'll be in 1991, 20 years after the settlement, and a time when stock can be sold, remains to be seen. Some, like Richard Frank and Emil Nadi, see the future as depending on the youth, and some, like Richard Frank, see the future as very different from the present. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.
You said that an earlier version of a land claim settlement bill provided for 95% of the money to go to villages. That's an emphasis really then on the village orientation. Now, however, under the bill that's enacted, there's an interesting kind of almost paternalistic relationship, I'm not using the right word, between region and village, in that for the first few years, any investments had to be approved by the regional corporation, in that land is divided on a checkerboard, and subsurface rights belong to the region. What is the relationship, then, of region to village?
The answer to that question varies depending on who's answering it, from region to region and from villager to regional corporation officer. It is a question of immediate concern as time passes and provisions of the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act are implemented, as the role of villages and the lifestyle of people in them changes. This is what Emil Nadi, president of the Interior's Joyon Limited, said about the relationship between village and region.
Well, I don't think it's paternalistic. I hope not. I hope it isn't anyway. It's not meant to be. We were required to give advice and review budgets and approve investments and plans. But the villages are autonomous. They have their own boards of directors, and they have their own officers, and they make their own decisions, and they invest their own money, and they make their own successes and failures. Mostly successes, we hope. But they do come to us for advice, or they go to IVA, or they deal with other agencies. And I think in time that's going to work. There are some problems now, mainly because of the size. Small size of villages does not allow them to really get into business.
But for village corporations that do want to get into business, or at least get on with the business and not go belly up, there are ways, as Nadi says, to get advice. One organization created to help the village corporations is the Interior Village Association, or IVA. Sam Dementov is president.
The Interior Village Association is a nonprofit association that was formed about 4 years ago by the village corporation presidents themselves. And it's designed primarily to help themselves implement the Claims Act. They all have the responsibility as profit corporations to do just that, make a profit. But there are a lot of things that could happen to a new corporation like this. And so we're designed to help them try to run through the problems or identify the problems and try to solve those.
Some of those problem areas are common to all fledgling corporations, though others may be unique to the ANSCA corporations.
If you form a corporation, there's a lot of steps that it has to go through in order to become a working corporation. And, of course, some of those are bookkeeping services, legal services, lands, stock issuance and maintenance, all these things you have to do as a corporation. And what the Village Profit Corporation presidents did about 4 years ago was try to identify all those problems and then hire people, professionals in each area that they identified, and get them into a group and an association. In this case, it's called Interior Village Association.
Before forming a separate organization, village corporation leaders first sought help from their regional corporation, Doyon Limited, but they were essentially in the same boat. Immediately after the passage of the Land Claim Settlement Act, there were a lot of organizational problems and confusion, and there was a concern regarding available manpower, particularly on a local level, for dealing with the Act's requirements. Emil Nadi.
There were a lot of confused people all the way from the villages, through the regions and through the state and on to D.C., you know, and it's taken a number of years, and there are still a lot of confused people.
But he's optimistic about dealing with that confusion on a village level.
The villages have a bright future, but it's going to require people getting a hold and taking charge of where those corporations are headed and do the planning.
Planning is an area Dementev thinks is lacking.
There has to be a whole array of plans in place, I think, that should be in place, or at least contemplated, for a land use. Mm-hmm. And those things, I think, are just in the formative stages, or they're just being thought about now, or in some cases, aren't even aware that they should be doing this.
Land, of course, is the focal point, along with the money, of the land claim settlement. The checkerboarding of village and regional selections and the regional corporation's entitlement to subsurface rights of village lands are aspects of the Act that are expected to create problems as land is conveyed. Doyon has anticipated some of those potential conflicts between regional and village interests.
Now, in terms of, say, hard rock mineral development, there's the possibility of some of that development being on village-owned land in terms of surface rights. How would you deal with that? Would you go in and trespass on lands or lease it, or how would that be dealt with?
Well, as a surface owner, the villages have some rights, and at the very least, I would think that they would charge the exploration companies for passing over their land and get some fees for. They're going to have equipment yards and gravel pits and a number of things where the villages are going to benefit. So far, the developments have been away from villages, purposely so, because don't want to go in and disrupt the village lifestyle. And at some point, we'll probably have to work closer with villages, and hopefully they'll invite the exploration in and get jobs and some benefits.
A number of interior village corporations have a good working relationship with the regional corporation. Ruby on the Yukon River is one of them. Don Honey is president of the village corporation and is also a member of the Doyon Board of Directors. Several of the villages downriver from Ruby merged into one corporation, but Ruby maintains its autonomy. Though Nadi feels mergers may be the way to go and encourages cooperative investments, even Doyon is thinking about possible joint ventures with village corporations sometime in the future, Honey is confident that Ruby can make it on its own.
I think that some of the villages in lower that did merge were having management problems. We didn't have that problem. Our overhead wasn't that high, and we had the expertise within the village to operate a good going corporation. That's why we decided to stay where we were.
A fuel depot is the Ruby Corporation's only investment to date, and it's doing quite well. So is their relationship to Doyon. According to Honey, his position on the board takes care of that. Another village corporation that feels on top of things is Minto. They do not contract for assistance from the Interior Village Association. They don't think they need to pay for outside help. Richard Frank.
I would say at this time that Minto is one of the few villages that's doing their paperwork correctly, investing correctly. So far, we've been coming up on top.
What kind of investments has Minto made?
Well, we've done some construction work, small construction work, for people that put out to, you know, put out for bid. And then right now we have bulk fuel system, or gas station, and then we have a general store down there, and that's doing really great. You actually have to stand in line to get out, pay for your items.
Office buildings, sawmills, and cold storage facilities are among the investments and planned investments of other interior village corporations. Honey, Frank, and Naughty all predict a bright future for Doyon Limited and the village corporations of the interior. I'm Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.